Welcome to the Round 15 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined again by FB Donkey.
Can we start talking about how our teams went?
You had an exceptional one. Why don't you jump straight into it?
I wouldn't say it was exceptional, just exceptional compared to yours, I guess. 20-26 for me, so that seemed pretty good in a buy round. Up to 286th overall. So that's ahead just slightly of where I finished last year, which is something good to aim for. Still way too back to win it, I think, but should make it a bit interesting on the run home. Collins killed it, obviously, for most teams. New trade-in, Rory Sloane. That's back-to-back 140 pluses for my new trade-ins with Steph Martin last week. Montagna did well. Ended up with Ablett as the captain. I know you did too, mate. That was a pretty good one. Barlow and Dusty also doing really well. And new recruit Delidio, 110, did pretty well too.
Very nice. I scored almost 200 points less, so I think you're now about 150 points ahead of me, and I think you also have a bigger round 15, so that's why I was saying last week I was hoping to get a bit more than 50 points ahead. Premiums didn't fire, and I was quite light on. I only had 19 players playing, so Heath Shaw's 46, Jimmy Bartels 54, wasn't brilliant. Rance only scored the 76. At least Smith scored 93, and Tom Phillips scored 87, so those two rookies sort of did that apart, but Toby Green, Dan Menzel, two of my PODs, both scoring in the 70s, wasn't super, so a forgettable week. I only dropped 77 spots, so I think Collins and Ablett maybe sort of saved me there. I dropped to 591st, so as long as I stay in the top 1,000 after the bye rounds, I think I'll be reasonably happy. So this week is sort of mission hang on, because my round 15 is pretty decimated.
Look, I think the one thing to keep you positive going into this week is I've got to assume that most teams are going to be struggling this week. I know that sort of collectively we've had pretty good results over the first two bye rounds, which might indicate that other teams were planning better for round 15, but I just don't think it's really the case. There's just too many really good rookies and premiums in the round 15 bye for everyone to have it completely sorted this week. So I'm hoping most teams are going in with about 18, 19 players.
I'm just hoping I don't have a heap more rookies than everyone else. So we'll see, Mark. After the week I just had, I'm not too optimistic, having 200 points behind you, but we'll see what the team musters. In terms of a rundown this week, it's going to be pretty similar to last week. We'll look at the round 15 players to trade out and the round 14 players to trade in. Before we get to the actual questions, we will do a quick group and league update. So in terms of our group, 21-34 was a top score with Luke's Vlosten translation. That was a pretty smart play on words, Mark.
Pretty good.
Yeah, and that pushed him up to 21-54th for the season. So well done to you, Luke. Also, we found out that somebody in our Supercoach Coach BB League, that's Lewis's Talk and Flags, scored 21-01 and moved into first on the weekend. So he's not in our Supercoach
Coach
group. Number
one.
Yeah, but we just thought we'd give him a bit of a shout out, and well done to you, Lewis. Hopefully you can keep it up. And I think Darren's still at seventh, so good luck to you as well, Darren, still leading our Supercoach Coach group.
Well within a chance.
Mm-hmm. In terms of our leagues, we had, again, the top four leagues for the week, so that's fairly fantastic. Included in that Supercoach Coach QQs and the AAs, so the Queens and Aces, and they moved up into first and second overall, and Supercoach Coach number one into third. So we're pretty happy about that. Took us 14 weeks to get up there, but we're glad to be there now. Like, hopefully we can hang on, Mark.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a slow start to the year for the leagues, but I think we rocketed into the top couple of spots during the buys last year as well.
And of the top 80 leagues, we had 14 of the top 80, so that's brilliant. And there's about 26,000 leagues. So of the 260 top leagues, so the top 1%, we have 30, Mark, more than 1 in 10 of the top 1%. So massive effort from the community.
That's most of our leagues, mate.
Yes, it is. We don't have a huge amount of leagues, but it's really, really good to know and good to see that all of you are doing so well. We tend to plan pretty well for the buys and tend to move up over the buys, and we haven't gotten to see that result this year until, you know, rounds 14, 15, but very, very exciting to see that, like we've been talking about. Hopefully we can keep this up, Mark. Hold on for round 15.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of coaches out there getting pretty low on trades, so there's going to be a fair bit of luck over the last 9 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I think the good thing is, compared to the last few years, buys are later, so we only have, what is it, like 8 rounds to sort of hold on for?
Yes, that's definitely going to help. I just worry that it's becoming a bit standard these days for players to be put out to pasture from the teams no longer in contention. So that was one of the reasons why I actually picked Sloan over Treloar last week.
Well, I've still got a third of my trades left, so I'm hoping that that will hold me in good stead. And I think we've recommended a slightly less kamikaze approach this year as compared to previous. So hopefully our members also have a few more trades up their sleeve as well.
Let's get on with it.
Yeah, we'll move on to the guts of the show now, Mark. Question here, and this is from at Blackie White on Twitter. With limited trades remaining, what's the priority in your eyes, Mark? What's more important, holding trades for injuries or holding trades for, you know, value upgrades like Dalhouse in a few weeks? Or will you be spending trades on building, as he's put it, swing sets? So, you know, a couple of DPP players that you can swing, like Adams and, you know, Hamilton, for example, or Petrarca and Tom Phillips. What are you trying to do with your last 6, 7, 8 trades?
I guess that there's a few decent rookies around, so I'm not really seeing the need to put a premium on the bench personally. You've got the Trengrove, Petrarca types, Adams, like you said, Collins even, that can cover across the lines, and I think that's going to be good enough cover. I've never been a fan of putting a premium on the bench. I know that you pretty much do it every year, Marcus, but my philosophy is upgrade, full steam ahead, get as many premiums as you can on the field, and then just stop and hold off. And I probably wouldn't be looking for a value upgrade like a Dalhouse in a couple of weeks. I guess the situation could change a little bit, but at this stage, I wouldn't even consider something like that.
In terms of those value upgrades, you normally get to that sort of line ball call decision when you get a player injured for, let's say, 2 to 3 weeks, and you could trade that premium out for a replacement, or you could cash in somebody like Petrarca, who might happen to be 400K when your player's been injured, to, you know, another value premium that has happened to drop in price and sitting at 400,000 too. In that case, are you better off sideswapping a bench player for a fallen premium to have him cover for 2 weeks, or are you better off trading that premium out in that situation? That's normally when I get sucked into it. It's like, well, instead of covering a short-term injury with a rookie or trading out the premium, maybe you could bring in a fallen premium instead. But it's not something that I would actively recommend targeting as a strategy, because
even though you do it every year.
Yeah, because it's been one of my learnings the last couple of years, is that, you know, it sounds like a good idea, but, you know, having that extra premium on bench a lot of time doesn't necessarily work out. You also need a donut to loophole with. You need the order of games to be correct. You know, there's a whole bunch of things that come into it.
Order of games can be extremely painful with the loopholing sort of factor. I think this year, the approach that I'm taking a little bit differently, and I've tried to keep it in mind all season, is that I'd like to just go a little bit deeper on my benches. I know last year with those last few weeks with so many players being out, that it was actually not even your first emergency that was tested. It was actually your second and third emergencies on each line that was tested. And so I've tried to keep in mind just going that little bit deeper this year. We'll see how we go.
All right, I think that sufficiently covers that question, and it's a fairly high-level topic, and it's hard to sort of get into the real grit of that, because it's really a team-by-team decision and week-by-week decision, depending on your injuries and such. So I think with limited trades, the main rule is just to practice being conservative, Mark.
Yeah.
We'll move on to the actual trade-out and trade-in discussions now. We'll start off with the trade-out. So again, round 15 trade-outs. Look at the rookies first. And the first question here is from Josh Button, or Pies Josh on Twitter. He doesn't want to upgrade Collins early, but he only has 17 this week, and I'm guessing a lot of his other players are premiums that he doesn't want to sideswap. Is it too early to trade in Collins? And he does have Rich as an option to sort of sideswap instead, but it leaves him one defensive upgrade short. I'm facing this personally this week, Mark. I'm going to have to trade to get players on field, and I'm sort of deciding between trading out Collins or Rich, and I'm really struggling between the two. Collins' break-even is only negative 30 after scoring 126, so he could shoot up a fair bit over the next, you know, couple of weeks when he gets back.
For me, in my situation, I have no intention of trading Collins out if I keep him past this week. So therefore, his price is largely irrelevant. It only really factors in if he gets injured later on and I do a side swap. So the fact that he's got a low break even kind of doesn't matter at all. The fact that he got a huge score last week means you get an extra 40K out of him. You can trade him at 254 and be totally cool with that. He's not going to get 126s all the time. It was only like 2 weeks ago he scored a 30-odd. I would have no dramas trading Collins out at all.
In your mind, that's better than trading Rich out?
Well, personally, I'm trading Rich out because I want to reach a higher level premium.
All right. But if the decision between upgrading Collins and sideswapping Rich left you...
Premium short.
Yeah, premium short. I'm assuming you'd then upgrade Collins 100%.
That's right. Yeah.
I 100% agree with that. So we'll move on to the other rookies here facing the bye this week. The next guy to talk about is Ruggles. He's another one with a low break-even of 24, but priced at 305,000 that could be traded out. He scored 81, 71, and 91 in the last 3 weeks. Really does look like a part of the best 22 now, and will probably serve as fairly decent cover over the remaining rounds. So he's one that you could potentially keep or trade if you needed the money.
And I think that you're exactly right there, that if you really, really need cash this week, you may just have to get rid of him. He's going to provide good cover for the rest of the year. But, I mean, I don't think you'd be expecting 80s every week. But if you need the money, probably not a bad time to get rid of him. I think that he's another one where the break-even really isn't that relevant, because if you keep him this week, you're probably going to be keeping him for the rest of the year.
Would you, for example, prefer to keep Ruggles over a player like Tucker? So Darcy Tucker's at 230,000. He's played 6 games so far and gone up 113K, but he's only averaged 54. If the money didn't make a huge difference for you, would you trade out a player like Tucker ahead of Ruggles and keep the better bench cover, or would you trade out the more expensive player to give yourself more cash flexibility?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of issues there, and it really depends whether the player is going to be your 7th defender or your 8th. If Tucker is your 8th defender, I think you don't need to have Ruggles in that spot. But if Tucker would then become your 7th defender, that's pretty tricky, and you're going to be putting yourself in some difficult situations later on with that. So, and to suggest that money's not an issue is going to be a pretty rare circumstance. Like, getting that extra funds could be the difference between getting a Doherty or an Alex Rantz sort of thing. So there's going to be a big difference in funds at this time of year.
Yeah, especially because a lot of the trades that we'll be dealing with from now onwards are injury trades. And if the injury happens early on in the game and your player scores close to a donut, it can really, really wreck you if you don't have any sort of cash in bank to deal with that. So quite team specific, but I think, you know, any three of these backline options, depending on your team structure, could be either kept or traded out. So don't think either or is particularly wrong.
I mean, obviously, you'd want to keep them if you can, but if you need to use the money, don't feel too bad.
Yeah. The next player that we're considering trading out is probably a definite trade out at this stage, and that's Jacob Hopper. Unfortunately, he's got a stress fracture and he's out for at least 6 weeks. So he's only unfortunately played 6 games and only gone up the 85,000 for his initial starting price. But, you know, for people looking to cash in, he'd seem like the number one cash in target this week, being out for 6 weeks.
Yeah, he was a definite keep for me going into the week, but then the news of the back injury means he, as you said, is a definite trade out. It's a weird situation. I only made 85,000 out of him, but I don't regret actually picking him, because he's played on my field a couple of weeks, scored okay, and he allowed me to cash down at the time to someone that was playing, and then now I can still make some money out of him. Like, I don't regret picking Hopper, even though he hasn't made as much as I was hoping.
So Keys is the other guy off on the bye this week. Matheson and Jansen are as well, but they're fairly fresh trade-in, so I wouldn't think people would be trading them out. Unfortunately, Keys has scored 23, 39, and 42 in the last 3 weeks. And as a result of that, his price has dropped from, I think he was close to 240 at one point, now down to 217. We've seen a lot of poor-scoring rookies turn things around eventually, including Menidu, who scored 130 on the weekend. Keys has played 9 games straight now, which is, you know, a big tick for him, especially when Jansen and Matheson are also competing for those sorts of spots. At no point has he lost his spot so far. Would you consider keeping a bloke like Keys, considering his low price point, or would you consider trading him ahead of some of those backline rookies like Tucker and Ruggles and Collins, particularly because, you know, Tom Phillips is on the bye this week in the midfield?
Yeah, absolutely. If you bring in Phillips, then it's easier to hide a player at your 10th midfield spot than it is anywhere else. And if you can put a DPP player there that you can hide, then that really makes it pretty good for your team.
Yes to trading Keys then.
Potentially. It's not for much money though.
All right, we'll move on to the premium trade out targets now. Daniel Rich is the first question here from Matt Volders. Is it time to drop Daniel FB Donkey's number one defensive lock, Rich, if you've only got 17 this week? We just talked about it previously, Mark. I'm considering it, and you're looking to trade him out, so I'm guessing that's a tick from you.
Yeah, my plan for probably several weeks now has been that Rich would go this round, just because I was looking at a similar spot where I'll only end up with 17 otherwise, and I feel like I can get a decent upgrade in for the rest of the season as well from Rich. Look, no excuses there, though. The thing that stands out about Daniel Rich is every time he has a good quarter or has a good game, he gets tagged the next quarter or the next game, and it really does put a cap on his ceiling. It was unlucky that he got injured in the second round and whenever it was and had that low 30. That really probably made him turn into a bit of a negative pick, but he hasn't been that bad for his price.
Alrighty, this question's from Darius Lee or at WangBang88 on Twitter. Is Green a primo to keep? He's averaging 89 for the season. His good game's really good. Tends to score above 110 when he has a big game, but his bad scores can be really bad as well. He's had three games in the 50s, 65 and a 74. So very swingy, which you'd expect from his position playing out the forward line.
Have you been happy with the pick?
Absolutely not. For his starting price, no. But it's hard to trade him out because, you know, he's been talked about as potentially an all-Australian candidate, and he is playing really well. It's just when GWS lose, it's hard for a medium forward to score a whole bunch of points. And I think his disposal efficiency just really lets him down as well, which is not something I think he's correcting in a hurry.
I think he's kicked nearly 30 goals this year. He's really been doing great. He's had three bags of four. That's pretty impressive. GWS has a very good draw leading into the finals, and I think that would definitely be enough reason to keep him. Look, to be honest, given their draw, if I didn't have him, I'd actually consider bringing him in at his current price. I find it hard to watch him every week knowing that you've got him, Marcus, because he's just so damaging and he can go massive. So there is like an opposite side to you hating to watch him because he can go down as well. I guess the only thing to watch out for is that I think Devon Smith played his first game in the kneeful on the weekend. Will come in at some point. I'm not sure how that affects Toby Green because Toby Green has definitely taken Devon's role this year.
So I could trade out Toby Green and use a trade that way, or I can try and bring in another premium, for example, and push Wingard and Green out to F6, F7, and that way can sort of loophole Green / Wingard because they're both players that they can either score quite big or score quite poorly because they both play as small, medium forward. So that can be a way to mitigate things because you can spend a trade to trade him out, or again, you can spend a trade on another cheap premium, potentially use him as a loophole as well. So there's a couple ways to go about it.
Yeah, no, like I would want to keep Green and run into the finals.
We'll move into the actual trade-in targets now. We'll start off with the rookies this week. The player that's fresh off the bye that played in round 13 is Alia from Sydney. We've talked about him previously, and he seems to only play when the key backs are injured, so quite a risky selection. But if you needed to downgrade in the back line, actually, there's another option who played this week, and that's Nathan Broad. So you might not need to consider Lee at all. Nathan Broad, Mark, what do you think about his game?
Honestly, didn't notice him very much, to be honest, man. I did watch that game because I had a lot of fantasy plays in it and didn't see a lot of Broad. What did he end up scoring?
He scored 66.
Okay, so decent. But wasn't he a late in? Like, weren't Batchelor and Grimes or someone else went out late and I think him and Townsend came in. So he wasn't even in the selected starting 22 and it was against the Lions. So I wouldn't take a lot of confidence from that either, to be honest.
So if you're looking to downgrade in the back line to get some cash in, let's say you needed to get rid of Ruggles to bring in cash to upgrade in the midfield, would you just bring in either or earlier or Nathan Broad, depending on which gets selected, if one of them gets selected?
I have no idea what I would do in that spot, to be honest, because I don't really like either of those guys. I'd be tempted, personally, I've got Adams up forward, so I'd probably bring in that Uber Wang guy from Frio just to open up the DPP. But yeah, is Teddy Richards ever coming back? I have no idea who I'd gamble on. Who would you take?
I think Broad acquitted himself pretty well. That small defender role seems to swap hands a little bit in the Richmond back line. So if they're not moving toward finals, they might give him a gig if some of the other small backs aren't performing, I guess.
Maybe.
In terms of rookies, I think the only other player to flag is Tom Phillips, who we talked about last week.
Yeah.
I picked him after only one game, and I was happy that he brought in 87 for me, and I'm assuming a lot more people will be bringing him in.
I think I was suggesting last week to pick him even if he wasn't named. So, yes, definitely pick him. I think he got it pretty easy on the weekend, though, against the Dockers. He's not going to have games where he has that many opportunities, I think, going forward. And it wouldn't surprise me to see him get dropped at some stage. But, yes, with his dual position status, he is the target of the week. Phillips will be very popular.
We'll move on to the trade-in targets in terms of premiums now. So the players fresh off the bye in the back line are Boyd, McVeigh, Pittard, and Suckling. Why don't you rank those four, Mark?
I think I would probably rate them in that order. I'd potentially have Pittard ahead of McVay. I think they will go pretty even going into the end of the year. Suckling's an interesting one with the Doggies getting Johannesson back over the next few weeks. I think that'll affect Suckling more than it will Boyd. Suckling's had a few good games lately and presents a bit of value. So a bit of gamble by bringing Suckling in, and Boyd's clear standout out of those four. And I still think, realistically, that the two Carlton boys are ahead of any of those guys.
We should talk about them in reference to last week's players who are still obviously buy free. So I'd agree with you, Mark. I think Boyd's the only one out of those four that I'd put in the same camp as the two Carlton blokes. If you're looking to save some money, I think I'd still have Rance Laird ahead of McVay and Pittard and Suckling.
There's a bit of a blanket you can put across those ones. I think Laird is actually the clear standout out of all those cheaper guys. And this is the one area where my team has really struggled, that my hate for Carlton meant that I couldn't pick Doherty or Simpson, and it's probably the biggest thing that's held my team back from being in the top 100 instead of just top 300.
If you were strapped for cash and needed the value in McVay, he's not an awful pick at 443, but if you have the cash to do something different, I would definitely not pick McVay. And I think, Mark, now that you've traded him in, I hope you actually agree, because he's only had two scores in the 100 so far this season. So he's all right, but he's not brilliant.
He is coming off a 130, so it's a tricky one, because I can definitely see him having enough big games over the rest of the year to average quite well. He is a bit inconsistent, though.
So that covers off the back line. We'll move to the midfield now, and the players fresh off the bye there are Robbie Gray, Luke Parker, Hanbury, Pritis. There are a few others that I'm not going to go into, like Josh Kennedy and Jack, because I think these are our preferred players. I'll start by ranking these. Hanbury 1, Gray 2, Pritis 3, and Parker 4. But I'm probably underselling Parker there, but I've never been on the Parker bandwagon all season, so I'm not about to get on now. He is at a good price, though, at $465,000, having scored a 67 in round 10 and 59 in round 12. So if anyone's really struggling to get cash together, he is a premium that is available really cheap right now.
I think Hanbury is the clear standout. Even with a really high break even, I'd still bring him in this week if I could afford it. Whereas Parker, Gray, and Pritis, they're all pretty even. Parker has that huge upside. Gray has a potential really big upside, but I don't like the fact that Porter out of finals contention. And Gray does seem to be, if you're going to tag any Port midfielder, he does seem to be the one you'd go to now. And Pritis, I don't like the fact that Nick Nat is not there putting it down his throat. So I think that means that Parker probably competes pretty well against those other guys. I'm hoping he's going to benefit from a week off, but Hanbury is definitely the standout.
I think Gray's really suffering from Boak's down year. Boak was demanding the tag.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you're right, Mark Gray clearly is the player to tag there. In terms of these guys in relation to last week's players, Hanbury, Pendlebury, and Ablett are sort of in the class of their own. But then, you know, in comparison, Stephen, Cochin, Sloan, Treloar, Sidebottom, how do they compare to Gray, Parker, and Pritis?
Yeah, I think that I would have Cochin, Sloan, Treloar ahead of Gray, Parker, and Pritis this week, to be honest. You are paying a bit of a premium for them. And you bring in Treloar last week, mate?
No, this week for me.
Okay, so you just delayed that a little bit. I think people that had Treloar last week would be very happy. Having Sloan, super happy. His disposal is shit, but his ability to go for contested ball and tackles and pressure acts is awesome, and he's going to be very fun to watch. But I think that I would take this week Treloar, given his price, out of all of those guys, including Gray, Parker, and Pritis.
I'd agree with that, Mark. And Sidebottom, interestingly enough, was tagged last week ahead of Treloar. So if anyone looking to Treloar, that could be a definite positive there. And of Treloar, Sidebottom, and Pendlebury, Sidebottom's definitely the most outside and potentially the most dangerous outside. So if he gets tagged on that outside ball, that'd be pointing to good things for Treloar, I think.
Yeah, and I think that Collingwood are going to want to prove themselves under Buckley for the rest of the year. Buckley's not going to want to be shutting up shop for the rest of the year. But I'm really worried about bringing in a player that is out of finals contention, a premium, into my midfield at this point in the season, given what we've seen in previous years. I'm a lot more comfortable bringing in someone aiming for a top eight spot.
We'll move on to the forward line now. The players fresh off the bye of note here are Zach Merritt, Lance Franklin, and Josh Kennedy. And I think they're actually all fairly tempting. Zach Merritt at 515 is quite unique for how well he's going. He's averaging 104 for the season, which if you look in the
forward... Nobody thinks he can keep it up.
Yeah, but he has really kept it up. And he's the fourth highest averaging forward for the season. So he's fresh off the bye. He could be good. Franklin this week is exceptionally cheap. He scored 69 and 57 in rounds 11 and 12. So he's dropped all the way to 439,000. And in the first 10 rounds, his lowest two scores were 83 and 91. And in fact, they were the only two scores under the ton for him up to that point. So he's been really quite consistent and hasn't had any of those massive 150 games, but nonetheless, should still be fairly good value at that price. And then there's Josh Kennedy as well, 489,000. And his price really dropped because of a 49 in round 11 that's now cycled out, but he's capable of some absolutely massive scores. He's had four above 137 for the season.
Wow. Out of them, I think I like Zach just because he's playing in the midfield. I'm not sure how Buddy goes with Tippett being out. I honestly don't know how to answer that question because he will be out for a little while. Zach would be the first I'd take, then Buddy, and then Josh Kennedy. He's a gun, but you're really relying on those massive, massive scores for him to turn out to be a good pick.
Yeah, I think you want to be picking up Kennedy, you know, around a similar price to where Franklin is now. Otherwise, like you said, you're probably taking too much risk on that roller coaster that you get on the down patch rather than on a hot streak. I'd have them ranked in the same way as you, Mark. How about in relation to last week's premium? So Montagna, Delidio, Martin, and Rewalt. Martin, obviously, a clear must-have. He's been close to best on ground for, you know, almost a month now. And Delidio, Mark just scored 110, which was good to see. And hasn't scored under 100, I think, since 2007 was what Faz quoted last. And Montagna's officially bottomed out as well. So he dropped another 4,500 and actually scored really well against Geelong. I mean, they ended up winning. So that 45's officially cycled out in round 11. 475,000 is great value for him.
Did you bring in Dusty last week?
Yes.
Have you got him? Yeah. Okay. So you've got Dusty. I mean, the tag went to Dusty on the weekend and then Robinson got concussed, so got taken out of the game, which let Dusty run free. And I guess he was always going to do that when he's given the chance to run free. And like you said, Dusty is just, this is the Dusty we've been expecting for several years. And he's finally coming out and in a chance with the Brownlow if he can stay fit.
Sorry, I think if we group the key position forwards, you'd have Rewalt, Franklin, Kennedy as the last three out of the seven. So how then does Zerett compare against Montagna, Delidio, Martin? I'm guessing Martin's that class above, but Zerett compared to Montagna, Delidio?
That's exactly how I'm looking at it, mate. And I think that out of the key position players, I'd take Buddy. And out of the midfielders, like you said, I'd take Martin. And then Delidio, Montagna, Zerett, I think you could really, they're on a very, very similar level. I do like probably maybe Montagna just with St Kilda's draw coming up and Zerett just being so young. I'm not sure whether he can totally keep it up for the entire year, and there's some injury concerns over Delidio. So go for the cheapest one and put Montagna in. And I guess I've already got Montagna, Delidio and Martin in my team, and I wouldn't mind having Zerett if I had the chance.
All right, so the last segment for the week, back by popular demand and after a smashing first week, Mark, is the Captain's Corner. James Hawkins on Twitter asked us to please do it again, and we certainly intend on running out the season doing it. So have you had a little think about who you're going to give the captaincy to this week, Mark?
Yep, I think it's just as obvious as it was last week, mate. I think that Ablett into Pendlebury is the go. I know Pendlebury was down last week, but I expect him to come back.
The only other player I'd consider is Hannabury, so I'm thinking potentially bringing Hannabury in this week. And so if I brought in Hannabury, just because he'd be a fresh trade-in for me, I'd be fairly tempted to go with Hannabury as a potential captain and take Gary Ablett as a vice-captain. I think out of Pendlebury, Ablett and Hannabury, Ablett still has the biggest upside, so give him a run at the VC, but I think I might pick Hannahs over Pendlebury.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be a bit of a battle on the run home between Danger and Ablett for that vice captaincy, because Ablett seems to be back in some pretty good form and Danger's been smashing out some big ones.
All right, so that wraps up this week's show. Don't forget, on a Tuesday night, you can hit us up on Facebook or Twitter to ask us your questions on social media. Next week, we'll actually be recording again on the Monday, and Mark sadly won't be joining us. You're taking a trip to watch your Bombers play up in WA.
I am, mate. Going to go and be the only Bomber at the ground. So if you see any Essendon supporters on TV barracking, that'll probably be me.
So we will miss you next week, but we'll have Faz and Dunny in your absence. So it'll be good to catch up with them after the bye. So hopefully the leagues do well, Mark. And when you come back, we'll still be first, second and third. Don't forget to our listeners out there, Yeah, you can hit us up on Patreon. That's patreon.com/supercoachcoach. If you're keen to help support the running costs of the show, that's just a platform that you can make a small pledge, like from a dollar a week to help us out. And at the end of the season, we will be recording a season review episode that will be released exclusively to our Patreon supporters as a bit of a thank you. So again, thanks for everyone who's supported so far, and please consider it if you have a few extra dollars. Anything to leave our listeners with, Mark? They're not going to hear from you for 2 weeks.
I guess just good luck in the last week of the buys, and I'm looking forward to getting back to 9 games a week, and hopefully injuries are kind to everyone and we don't run out of trades. And congratulations to everyone that's in the number 1, 2, and 3 leagues.
Woo! I don't have much more to add than that, except again, well done everyone. So we'll catch you again next week, and all the best for the last week of the buy rounds. Fingers crossed we can hold on. See ya.
So, yeah.